the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
This is the podcast for broadcast. Sound off podcast. With Matt Kendall.
This week I speak with Drax from CKNW in Vancouver. His late night show, The Shift with Drax, is almost a year old now, and it's growing. In fact, it appears across the Chorus Radio Network, and you don't have to listen overnight to enjoy it. There's a podcast for that, of course. Now, my late night listening is generally podcasts and two radio shows, Ryan Recker at KMOX in St. Louis and The Shift with Drax. Because, you know, talk, callers, late night, radio. I've also had Ryan Recker on this podcast series, and you'll need to dial it back to episode 109 to hear him. First thing you're going to notice about Drax is he's Australian. He's also made some mistakes, some private, one very public, but he lives to tell the tale today. So who'd you grow up listening to in Australia on the radio? How'd you get into this radio thing?
So when I was about eight or so, I used to listen to this radio station called 4SS. It was like a local AM station in the area where I worked. There was just something about the DJs on the radio. I kind of liked what they'd talk about, how they talked about it, how they sort of talked about music. I liked how they would talk up to when the vocals would start. I didn't even know what that was called. And I liked all the sound effects and everything in between the songs. And I didn't really figure out until I was probably 10 or 11 that that's really the course I wanted to take. I was like, I just want to do what they do on the radio. So I would, anytime they do like remotes or street activations, I'd try and get out there. Like, I was one of those kids that would chase radio station cars as a young teenager to get stickers.
What city did you do that in?
So I lived on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. I actually moved around quite a bit, but this particular radio station, 4SS, was out of a city called Nambour, which is about an hour north of Brisbane, which is in Queensland, which is the hot bit. I know that you're based in Winnipeg. What did you say? It was like minus 30. Well, right now in Queensland, it's probably about 38 degrees. So, I hung out in that place for a long time through most of my sort of younger teenage years. And yeah, that's where I just fell in love with radio.
So I'm Canadian. I don't know enough about Australian radio to really say much about it. The only thing I know is that there's some pretty cool stations that some Canadian artists would get airplay on. So a band like the Tea Party would come back and say, oh my God, we're getting like this. Triple M is playing us. I would hear about these stations, but I don't know anything about Australian radio. So what do I need to know?
Australian radio is interesting. I think Australian radio is very similar to Irish radio, in the respect that radio markets there are very, very, very promotionally active, like billboards, television commercials, bus shells. In Australia, it's interesting because they don't. I haven't noticed this in Canada. In Australia, when I was growing up, radio stations would go out and give you free stuff, so you'd be listening to the radio. And then you would hear someone out in the car going, oh my God, we're loaded up with everything. So they would have magazines and cans of Coke. And, you know, if you're a client of the radio station, you could pay to be in on that. And that was not something I really noticed anywhere else. It was something that every single Australian radio station did at one stage. And I found that to be a really interesting way to get people to listen to your radio station by giving them stuff, essentially.
So two things I know that are different, and that's the number of radio stations. You've got less radio stations in Australia than North America, where we're just littered with radio stations.
Yeah. And highly regulated. Yeah. In Australia, like it's, you know, you can only have so many voices in one market. I know that the rules are somewhat similar in Canada. I know the US can be somewhat of a free for all. Same with New Zealand as well. But in Australia, you can only have, two licenses per market. So that kind of reduces what you can really do. But they also have digital radio, too, which is actually pretty big in Australia.
You also have more people working at the radio station because there's more money coming into the radio station because there's less stations. So you've got these morning shows with big production crews. You've got four or five producers on it.
Yeah, there's one morning show in Sydney, Australia, Kyle and Jackie O. I think the last count I did, they had upwards of 7 or 8, maybe even 9 people working on their show. And look, they all have their roles. You know, one person might be cutting up audio, one person might be doing video, one person's doing social media, someone's answering phones. They're massive operations, but those massive operations also bring in millions of dollars for those companies.
So for you in Australia, what did it mean for you? What was your career like when you were going around Australia working at the stations that you worked at? Which would include, by the way, Triple J, yeah. Nova, and Triple M. Is that correct?
Yeah. Triple J was my first big job. That was interesting. I started working there when I was still in grade 11. So I'd applied to go there for work experience. In Australia, when you're in grade 10, you do 1 or 2 weeks work experience in a career that you might be interested in. So I was already doing community radio. So I decided to apply to Triple J to go there and do work experience for a week. So I went there for a week. And on the third day that I was there, because I was a 16-year-old and I was a radio 16-year-old, so I was a pest. So as soon as I got in there, I started, you know, harassing people for work, as you do. So the third day that I was there, the all-night announcer actually called in sick. And the program director said, all right, you think you're so good. How about you jump on and host tonight's overnight show? So I did as a 16-year-old, and I ended up working there for the next 6-7 years.
So when the Australian portion of your career sort of wound down, and I read this on the internet, of course, because that's where we get all of our information now. You know, you were quoted as saying you wanted a fresh start and you wanted to, you know, maybe take a chance in Canada. So how did that come about and why did you need this fresh start?
And I've been pretty honest about this, I'd burnt some pretty important bridges in my career early in the piece, just by making stupid decisions, saying inappropriate things to clients. I once told a listener to fuck off on the phone, not on air, but, you know, just in a moment of frustration. I'd applied for, I'll tell you the story. I was working for a company called DMG Radio. And at that stage, they owned all the Nova stations and a chain of Hot FM stations. And I was doing drive on one of the Hot FM stations. And it was my goal to get to a station called Hot 91, which was a station that was being started in the town where I grew up listening to 4SS. And I wanted to get to that station. So I was working really hard to get to that point because I knew that they were about to open up that station. They were looking internally to hire people. So I applied. And about 2 weeks later, the program director, the launch program director calls me and she says, look, I don't have a job for you because you're just not good enough. And I think when she said that to me, I think that kind of triggered some anger in me, because that afternoon when I went into work, that was the incident where I told a listener to fuck off on the phone because they had chirped me about something I'd said on the radio. I was suspended for a couple of days, and then that eventually led to my very first firing in radio, actually, which was really tough for me. I'd never experienced that before. You know, that was the first time I was fired. I was fired a couple more times after that for silly things. And, you know, I'd gotten a pretty solid job as a program director. I'd started moving into the programming world and was doing that pretty much 5 or 6 years. And then I just thought, you know what, I feel because of those bridges that I've burnt along the way, it was going to limit the jobs that I could get. So I thought, you know what, I'll try overseas. I'll try my skills. I'll apply for some jobs in Canada and I'll see what happens. And I was just applying for just regular drive roles in small market, you know, BC, Alberta. And I got in contact with Tarzan Dan. Everyone in Canada knows who Tarzan Dan is. He now works at Q107 in Calgary. And he said to me, he goes, you're a program director, right? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, why are you just applying for on-air roles? You should apply for PD jobs too. So I did. And I actually got a PD job. The third job I applied for, I got in Canada. And so that was kind of fun.
Which station was that at?
That was Mountain FM in Castlegar, which was owned by Vista Radio, still is. It's now known as the GOAT. And I jumped on a plane in October of 2009 and never looked back.
Boy, you hit a home run with that one. I'm trying to think of an Australian sort of, you know, equivalent to a home run, but I don't have one.
I'm thinking of a cricket reference, but because I'm not a sports guy, I can't give you a good terminology. I'll just sound stupid. So I'll just leave it.
What do you call it when you get 6 points in Aussie rules football when the ball goes through the middle two posts?
A goal? I don't know.
I don't even know that either.
I don't know.
I think I might know more about Aussie rules football than you.
Oh, and that's fine. There are plenty of Canadians that do. In fact, there's plenty of Canadian leagues, believe it or not.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a guy in a band in Vancouver that actually is the captain of his local team because he spent some time in Australia as a university student.
And that's something. Since about 2010, we've had more and more Australians on the air, predominantly in Vancouver. But we all got
so many of them.
I know, but we all got used to the accent because when we went skiing at Whistler, they were always putting us on the chair. So we got used to the accent while we were skiing, and now we get used to them on the radio.
Oh, don't worry. We still get the casual xenophobia from some Canadians that don't like accents on the radio. We get them in emails. Don't you worry about that. They're usually written in all caps, though.
Do you guys like have a club? Do you all hang out together as like the Stonecutters, or do you all
the Gumleaf Mafia?
Matt.
Yeah. So it's me. It's Matt Sutton from Z95.3. It's Kai Tucker from Kiss. In fact, have you noticed? I don't know, those people that live on the west coast of Canada. There's a business there called Citruso. It's like a citrus carpet cleaning company, and they only use Australians for their voiceovers. So many years ago when I moved here, Ronnie Stanton, the Australian program director who lived here and worked for Chorus for many years, was the voiceover guy. Then it suddenly flipped to Kai Tucker. So I've now made it my mission in life to steal that contract from Kai Tucker at some stage. He doesn't know that. Someone's probably going to hear it in this podcast, but I'm coming after him.
Yeah, the voice has changed 3 times and nobody's noticed.
Because we all sound the same.
That's right, exactly.
And here's a fun fact about the 3 Australians currently working in the Vancouver market. We all at one stage worked in the exact same market in Australia, just at different stations. So Matt Sutton worked at CFM across the street, and Kai and I worked at Hot 91 on the Sunshine Coast.
All right, well, you know I hired Matt Sutton and brought him to Canada. So
you did?
Yeah, I'll take the blame on that one.
Sure.
But who are we going to blame about you? Tarzan Dan?
Who are we going to blame about me? You're going to blame Jason Mann, who was then the group program director of Vista Radio. He worked for Bell in the last couple of years, and I think he's now stepped away and is now back into the tech business. He took a chance on me. In fact, what I found really strange about applying for that job at Vista is I was interviewed 4 different times by 4 different people. So I was interviewed by the GM of the radio station, Kevin Enison. Then I was interviewed by Jason Mann. Then I was interviewed by Brian Edwards, who was the head of the company. And then I was interviewed by Gary Russell, who was the GM of Vista Radio in Prince George. They were all stakeholders in that hiring. So I found that odd. It was the first time I'd ever been interviewed by 4 different people for about an hour each for a job.
How'd you get to Jet FM in Comox Valley?
I was working at Vista in the Kootenays. I was there for a couple of years, and then they moved me to Kelowna. I programmed 103.9 The Juice for about a year and did Drive with Liz McKinney for the time that I was there. They wanted to make some changes at The Juice, and I kind of wanted something a little bit more meaty to do. So I asked them if I could get a transfer to Vancouver Island because I knew that there was a group program director job open. And to be honest with you, I kind of felt like my hands were tied at the Juice because there was way too many cooks in the kitchen. So I was like, you know what? I'll just get out of this situation and they can do what they want with this radio station and I'll go run another radio station. So they gave me a few of their stations on the island to run, which was super fun. So I did mornings on Jet in Courtney and was the PD for Jet, the PD for the River in Campbell River, 1240 in Port Hardy, and Sun FM in Powell River. And those stations are all changed brands now as well.
And you know why I mentioned Jet FM, because the next thing that happened was you were let go from there over a question that you'd asked the Premier of British Columbia. And I'll admit to you, I had not heard this until today. And I
you found the audio?
I have the audio, yes.
Oh, see, that's weird. I didn't think it was still out there. I know that I have one hard copy, but I hadn't seen it online for a while. I actually had it on my SoundCloud for a couple of months after the after the incident. I don't know. Maybe it's still on my SoundCloud. Where did you find it?
I'm not telling. It cost me a lot of money to get it, I might point out.
It cost you? You paid money for that? Oh, my goodness. You should have asked me. I would have sent it to you for free.
This is a podcast. We have no money for such things.
I know you used to be a radio person. I know that you have a pretty good sense of humor because you've been on the Jeff O'Neill show many times. But Andrew in Comox wants to know what it's like being a MILF.
You know, I take that as a compliment.
Oh, good.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like it's better a MILF than a cougar, I think.
Yes, that's true.
That is true.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah. So I tell him thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Susan in Black.
Yeah. That was, December 21st. Actually, no, December 20th, 2012. The day that the Earth was meant to end, right?
Right. The Mayans predicted the end that day.
So the premier, Christy Clark, at the time was doing the Christmas call arounds to radio stations. A lot of politicians do this where they, you know, they press the flesh a couple of days before the holidays just to wish everybody Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays and the such. She comes on my show. But a couple of days leading up to that, I say to my listeners, like, the premier's going to be here on Friday. If you've got questions for the premier, email them to me. Now, I was on a rock station. I like to push the boundaries a little bit on some things, and I didn't think that the question that I'd received from a listener, Andrew, was that big a deal. And the question was, what is it like to be a MILF? So I posed the question to the premier in the form of, would you prefer to be a MILF or a cougar? And she said, a cougar, laughed it off. We had a fun time. I continued on the show. Went about my business, and then suddenly I got an email from a woman by the name of Lila Yule, who was a political blogger. She's like, did you call the premier a MILF on your show? And she wrote a column about it. And what it actually triggered was other media picking up on that audio and talking about it, which obviously had led back to the management of Vista, and Vista were not happy about it. So they suspended me just before Christmas. I was suspended during the holidays, and then they fired me on the 7th of January the next year.
So is that the birth of fake outrage? Because it seems like that might be one of the very first times that here we are. Did the blogger even hear the bit, or did they just hear?
Oh yeah. Oh no, she heard it. I'm friends with Lila now. She's been on my show. Like, look, she was just doing what she does. She is a political blogger and was blogging about politics and found an interesting piece of audio that led to a really interesting story. But to be honest with you, I while in the moment of me being fired, was really frightening. I knew the right people in the media to contact straight away to blow the story out of the water, so I would at least have some sort of leverage walking into another job.
Yeah, so you even started the question by mentioning the Jeff O'Neill show on CFOX.
Yeah, I did. I did. I said, look, you might get interesting questions from time to time. You go on the Jeff O'Neill show all the time, and at that stage, I was just a fan of the Jeff O'Neill show. I'd listen to it. I'd actually roll tape on it sometimes in the other studio while I was on air at Jet, and I would air check their show to hear what they were getting up to. Just looking for ideas, as we all do.
Do you think if Jeff O'Neill asked the question that he keeps his job?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Maybe not now in 2019, but back in 2012, sure.
So this isn't a question you would ever ask again.
Oh, no. And it wasn't even a question that came from my mind.
No, it was a listener question.
It was a listener question. Yeah. And look, I got to be honest with you. I think Vista overreacted to it. The people that made that decision to get rid of me no longer are involved with that company. So I feel more than comfortable talking about how ridiculous that situation was. I think it was an overreaction. I think, to be honest with you, the company at that stage maybe wasn't financially where they wanted to be. I was making a lot of money. My morning guy in Campbell River was making a lot of money. This is just me speculating. Maybe I was making too much money. They wanted to save some dollars and they were just looking for a reason to get out. It could have been as simple as that, but I really do think they overreacted.
Then you wind up working at CFOX where Jeff O'Neill is and the station that you quoted. I mean, it's ironic how it turned out.
Here's what's cool about that situation. The day I was fired. I contacted my friend Haley Cooper. She's the now one of the anchors at 1010 in Toronto. She was working at News 1130 at the time, and I called her straight around. I'm like, I just got fired. She's like, oh, we can do a story on this. So News 1130 broke the news that I was fired for that comment, and then within 12 hours, I had another job offer. So I'm laying in bed the next morning at 9 a.m. with my eyes wide open thinking, so I got fired yesterday. My immigration is tied to my job because I'd only been here a few years. What's going to happen? And then the phone rings. And on the other end of that phone call is Dunner from CFOX, the then program director. And he said, hey, you know, we heard what happened. We've heard the audio. We'd like to see if you'd like to come work for us at CFOX. So I said, you know what, let me think about it. I got off the phone, had a discussion with my then other half about the possibility of maybe moving to Vancouver to try something. We discussed it for a couple of hours. I called him back straight away after that and said, you know what, let's do this. Let me know what we need to do. And then the next day I was on a ferry to go meet Dunner and the team at CFOX.
So you've made a few mistakes in your career. You broke a few rules and things are going well for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, things are great. I couldn't be in a better place in my career, to be honest with you.
Hang on. The story grows. Do me a favor first. Grab a copy of Valerie Geller's book, Creating Powerful Radio. Turn to chapter 6, where it covers a lot of what I'm about to talk about with Drax. About moving from rock to talk. They've got a lot more in common than you might think.
25 catalogs. Over 2,000 albums. 61,000 songs. 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
How long did you work at CFOX?
I was on air at CFOX for exactly 1 year.
And then, how did you ever get involved with talk radio?
So here's what was cool is working at a radio station in a building that has three other radio stations, you naturally take an interest in what's going on around you, right? A lot of us have been in those situations, those of us that work in radio, where you know there might be a couple of other stations. You might have friends that work on there. But I'd never really been in a situation where there was a talk station in the same building as me. So I would kind of go down there and see what was going on. And kind of loiter and I was kind of thinking that might be fun to try. And I thought about doing talk radio as a 10-year plan down the road. I'd planned by the age of 45 to be able to do some sort of talk radio because, you know, as much as I love music radio, some program directors have some pretty interesting rules about how you shouldn't talk. You know, on CFOX, we're allowed to talk a max of 2 minutes an hour. That was it. 30-second breaks. And we only had four breaks now. I'm like, I can't really, as a guy in my early 30s, I've got more stuff I want to say. I want to say more things. So I started sort of getting in Tom Plasteris's ear and Ian Koenigsfest's ear about, oh, maybe I could fill in. Maybe I could, you know, fill in on the weekend when someone's, you know, because I've got nothing to lose by saying that. Right? How many other people from the rock station are going to go down to the talk station and go, hey, you should put me on your talk station? No one's really going to do that. Like you got to have a set of balls like this big to be able to even just say that to somebody, right? Most people wouldn't even do that. So I thought, you know, I've got nothing to lose by doing this. So then one day, Ian Koenigsfest contacts me and goes, Sean Leslie's going to be away this weekend. Could you do two shows? And I literally shat my pants. Okay, figuratively. Because I was like, there's the opportunity I wanted. It's been handed to me. Oh my God, now what do I do? because I'd never done that before. I'd done some storm coverage here or there on FM stations back in Australia when, you know, when the shit hits the fan and you just got to stay on, give information. But I'd never really done talk radio in that sort of way. So
what were those first two shows like?
They were really good. They were super fun. They were politics heavy. And I wasn't really that much of a watcher of politics too closely. I kind of watched it, but kind of from afar. But, you know, I knew that if you were going to be in talk radio, you had to, you know, pay attention to what's going on around you. So it was a very steep learning curve. It was fun, though. That first two shows led to other shows.
What rules in radio really do need to be broken?
I think what Now is doing in Edmonton with the way that they are able to mix interesting talk and content with music and not really stick to, oh, you can only talk for this many minutes an hour. I know that a lot of program directors now are realizing, and once again, you know, this is a Stanton thing. Ronnie Stanton was saying this, you know, 10 years ago, that there's going to come a time where the personality of the jock on air is going to be just as important as the music to keep people listening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just makes sense because the music is available everywhere, but the jock is not.
Yeah, and look, if your content is compelling and fun and people really enjoy what you have to offer, they're going to keep coming back to it. So, look, I don't know where that's going to go. I know that, you know, just going back to reference Australian radio, the Triple M network in Australia for the past, you know, 10, 20 years has been really, really experimenting well with talk in an FM rock environment. You know, they started doing this with Spoon Man many, many, many years ago in the 90s. They'd try it on and off. And then people would be pissed when they'd take the show off and then they'd put it back on again. And now they have a guy called Steven Sinatiempo, who does their late evening. It's a mix of talk and music and political commentary. And then overnight, they have a guy called Luke Boner, who worked in talk radio in Australia for many, many, many years, now hosting their live overnight show, Talk in a Rock Environment. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that's where some of us can actually go. You know, Terry at K97 in Edmonton, I want to hear that guy talk more because I like him. I want to hear what he has to say. Maybe we're going to get to a point where he only has to play a couple of songs an hour because he's just having a chat about stuff. Because that's what I find fascinating about radio, is I want to hear what the personalities have to say.
How come some people can't make that transition from rock to talk? You could. You did it so seamlessly, but others can't do it.
Yeah, I think you can be sometimes a product of your radio environment as well. If you sort of get yourself in a situation where what you do and what you know on a daily basis is very short and succinct, and you don't really have a chance to sort of breathe outside of that, it can be a really frightening prospect for people, and they may choose not to take it on. But I think the best way to get over that fear is, you know, because the one thing I hear from people that work in FM radio, my friends in FM radio, they say, oh, I don't know how you can talk for 4 hours. And I usually say to them, I'm like, if you started podcasting and doing a podcast outside of your radio show where you can only talk for 2 minutes an hour, you'd be able to figure out a way into talk radio. Because I believe anyone that works in radio has it in them. Because when you look at, you know, talk radio is generational. Where does that talent come from? A lot of the talk radio people come from FM radio. They all started like Jeff MacArthur, who was on 640 in Toronto for years and years and years, was the morning guy at 96 FM in London. You know, even Mike Stafford. Stafford was on The Edge. He's now doing mornings at 640. He's been there for years. He worked at 1010 as well. Like, you know, that's where these guys are coming from. And we've seen this in the last couple of years as well with Roger Kincaid going from X to 770. I know he's not there anymore, but even Zach from Q107, he's filling in over on 770. You got Sheets from Kissing Country. He fills in on Ched sometimes. So, you know, that's the lineage. I think if you're a guy or a gal that works in FM radio and you're wondering, oh, what's the next step? Think about talk radio. And you know what? I'll say this as well. Not enough women in talk radio in this country. There needs to be more.
How do we fix that?
Open the doors. Just open the doors. There's so many amazing, talented women on FM radio in this country that absolutely deserve a slot on talk radio. Like the fact that, you know, when you look at the Chorus talk stations, there's so many women now than compared to what, 6-7 years ago. And the more of that, the better. Like CKNW's Drive Show, which is in the top three in the market, is a female drive show. The CBC in Vancouver is a female drive show. And they rate their asses off. So we need to get more women in talk radio for sure.
Your show is a shift, a late night show. And when I first contacted you, you were just starting it. So you didn't want to do the podcast just then because we didn't really know what we were dealing with at that point. But we kind of do now. And I think it's a breath of fresh air because we were talking about putting personalities on the radio. And I reached out to Ryan Recker down who does Overnight America. I love his show. And, you know, it was nice that there was going to be people like Ryan on the air and doing these shows as opposed to some of the syndicated stuff that talk radio had defaulted to for many, many years. And I don't want to knock the Art Bell stuff too much because I know that's got a following. But I'd much prefer to have somebody talking to me about today's current stuff. So how did your show come about? What was the genesis to the shift getting going across the country?
I had wanted to do a show similar to that for many years, something sort of overnight. I'd even discussed the idea with Mike Ben Dixon at 1010 a couple of times. And then I noticed that the contract was coming up for Coast to Coast and I had kind of an inkling and maybe some insider knowledge that Bell was going to take the Coast to Coast contract back and put it on their own station. So I thought, you know, there's an opportunity here for me, you know, to forge my own path and do the show that I really want to do, because I loved working with Linda on the drive show, but you know, we were going to traffic and doing this every 5 minutes. There wasn't any room to sort of breathe and sort of have a chat and a conversation. So I thought, you know what, this is a really good opportunity to sort of pitch my idea to the seven program directors of Chorus that would be making this decision. So I, just on my own volition, I sat here right at this very computer that I'm talking to you right now at. I opened up an Excel spreadsheet. I opened up a PowerPoint. I built a PowerPoint about what type of show I would provide, what it would sound like, what the imaging would sound like. And I presented that to Larry Gifford. And he said, you know what? This is a really good idea. I like this idea. Let me run this by the other PDs and we'll see how we go. So they had a few people that they were considering, but I think they've never actually told me this, but I think they really liked my proposal. I think they liked that I kind of took that challenge on without even being asked to, and presented them. Cause that's the thing is like I said to you before, I'm in the space now where I feel that I've got nothing to lose. So I may as well ask for it. Right. So I literally asked for the job and they gave me the job that I wanted.
What's this studio that you're talking from? This is your home studio. What happens in this studio?
So considering the horrific hours that our show goes to air, I kind of made it a request in my contract negotiation with Chorus that they would kind of help me set up a little studio at the house because our show, is live and it's in late night. So we're 10 to 2, but we really are working to Toronto time. So our show is 1 to 5 a.m. So what's tricky with that is if we want to book guests or kind of organize stuff on the East Coast, we have to have that said and done by midday at the latest West Coast time. So we have our meeting at noon. So I go to sleep, wake up at 11. I have a meeting for the show an hour after I wake up. They built me this little studio so I can record interviews and just get stuff prepped for my show from here.
Because it looks fantastic. It looks like better than mine. So now I'm jealous.
You should totally be jealous because I've got everything I can. I've got two microphones. I got a phone box so I can do phone calls like what you can do. I got cable and internet in here as well so I can watch the news. I can take audio from the television if I want to grab it as well. It's like actually having a proper studio at my house. And to be honest with you, I'm one of those guys, and I'll tell anyone that listens, that I would love a day where I don't need to go to the office to do my show.
Have you visited every city that you're broadcast in?
I haven't visited every city. That's kind of on the list. I've been to a couple of them, but it's difficult to get out and about. And I'm trying to convince them to fly me in to meet some of the local crews. But we'll get there eventually.
Yeah,
hey, we're a year in. We're still a puppy.
I didn't want the question to come off as being some sort of, well, you know, you haven't been everywhere. But because I've been on the air in Montreal, and there are some parts of Montreal I've never been to, and I've been awarding prizes to people in Repentigny for years, but I can't even find it if you put me in a car. And, yeah. You know, same goes in Winnipeg. I mean,
has George Norrie been to Barrie, Ontario? No, he hasn't.
Yeah.
So
how do you come up with the stuff so it's truly national and it truly works for all the markets that you're touching at that time?
I think of what is the listener going to find interesting mentality first, and then usually it just falls into place. So what we do is we have Global News has this great thing called Chartbeat. A lot of media companies use it, where it kind of tells you what is trending in your ecosystem, in your web space. So what are the big stories that people are clicking on, right? So I generally keep an eye on that, and we'll kind of base our show kind of what's going on that list. But things change pretty quickly. But we start with a few headlines. We find a big lead, like the big story we want to talk about, something that's going to get phone calls, because I always want our listeners to interact. That's another thing that I wanted to make sure that this show was as well, was an outlet for people to actually have their opinion heard. Because the one thing I notice in talk radio stations, there are some hosts that do not want to take any live telephone calls because they don't want to be challenged on anything. Whereas our show is a phone lines always open deal. We figure out what those big stories are. We put them in a bit of a list. We look at what audio we can find, and then we build from there.
But you're okay being uncomfortable. That's why.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's totally fun.
When you bring callers on, how do you manage it? Because you have to manage callers. You have to prep them. You want them to get to the point quickly. What are some of the techniques you do so that you can keep the show moving and have callers? Because the late night audience can be quite wacky.
Yeah, I'm rude to some callers and not rude to others. And not because I want to be specifically rude to somebody. I find that sometimes if I inject a little bit of sarcastic rudeness into the conversation, it can move things along a little bit, right? Because, you know, let's be honest, when we listen to talk radio, it can be very formal and a bit stodgy. Whereas I come at this from a good way to describe my show? I come at this from an early 90s morning show perspective. I want to have fun at every turn. So if I feel a caller is a bit drab, and look, Bob, my producer, is an amazing screener. He was David Berner's producer. He was Dan Russell's sports talk producer for years and years and years. So that's why we wanted Bob, because he is the Peter LaSalle of talk radio, Matt. That's how good he is. So he's good at screening the callers. He lets me know what sort of situation I'm walking into. You know, if the caller's racist, he'll say racist in capital letters, so I know that I'm walking into a situation where I'm going to be talking to a moron who's going to say something stupid, so I know how to deal with them. But the calls are great. We get a lot of strange calls. We get a lot of people who just want to have a conversation. We get a lot of people who like conspiracy theories still. It's a pretty big mix.
I think it's fantastic that you've got the right call screener. And I think that's where I was going. This is why we don't have as many phone callers in talk radio anymore, is because we don't have very good call screeners. It's not an art that we used to develop. And I think somebody told me a story once about how they got on with Charlie Rose. And it was, you have to prep the caller. And, yep. You know, to have producers who can prep the caller and do it effectively is really going to be testimony to how strong you're going to be able to interact with the caller.
Yeah, I got strong regulars, too. I got a guy called Josh in Brampton that calls. I got a guy called Michael in Toronto. I got a guy called Clark in Didsbury. And all of these guys are switched on. I got Lily in Edmonton, who's one of my blind listeners. She is fabulous. When she calls in, it's always a good chat. And that's the thing, too, I think regular folks don't understand how many visually impaired listeners there are of talk radio. My insurance guy, Donovan Tilsley, who also is a bit of a radio guy himself, you know, it really is a lifeline for people who are visually impaired. And it's fascinating when those listeners call in and I get to chat to them as well, because it's an interesting sort of, you know, because we get up every day, we can see stuff, and we take our sight for granted. But, you know, those people that can't really see very well and rely on their hearing really do listen to radio a little bit more intently than most radio listeners, I feel. And I always love having them on the show to chat to them.
What about some other regular contributors who will come on the show? Do you have any regular people you just bring on from time to time for perspective on certain subjects?
Yeah, I get a lawyer by the name of Paul Doroshenko on. He's a pretty popular fixture on the West Coast on talk radio. He's a criminal defense lawyer. Love getting him on. He loves radio. And for those that know how this works, sometimes there are some people that won't come into the radio station to do interviews. But if I say to him, hey, I need you at midnight, he'll be in studio. Like he'll come in because he loves it so much. And I keep encouraging him to try and pitch a show to Chorus to do legal talkback, like what Bill Handel does at KFI in Los Angeles on Saturday mornings, do an hour of free legal advice, because I think he'd be really good at it. Him and Kyla Lee, actually. She's another lawyer that works with Paul. And I got this great guy. There's a guy called Steve Stebbing. He's a young guy who lives in Penticton. Steve and I have been friends for, geez, I'm going to say close on 8 years. He used to listen to me on the Fox, and I started listening to his podcast where he would talk about movies and comic books. And I'd said to him, I'm like, have you ever thought of actually reviewing movies as a career and doing it on the radio? And he'd never really thought about it before. Then he started reviewing movies on my show, and every single show I've done since C-Fox, Steve's been a part of doing movies for us. And yeah, Steve's great. I'm a big fan of Steve's work. I'll always hawk Steve's work, and I'll always have Steve on whatever type of show I'm doing.
What's Vancouver's problem? There's no Uber, there's no Lyft, there's nowhere to live, and you're stuck with this bad hockey team.
That question, wow. I don't know. I live in Coquitlam, so I couldn't really answer that question. That's a strategic answer. No. What's Vancouver's problem? I think Vancouver has a stick up its ass, to be honest with you. Yeah, I really think they do. They need to relax a little bit more. Everyone's angry. I don't know what it's like in Winnipeg, but geez, man. There are crazy people on the roads. There are crazy people in the streets. Everyone just needs to chill out. Yeah, I don't know about the hockey team, man. I'm waiting for the Seattle team so I can buy a jersey and really, really, really annoy people.
What's something that North Americans need to know about Aussies that we need to really brush up on?
We like using profanity as a term of endearment.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one thing. Meat pies and sausage rolls are extremely important. And don't ever take our beer away from us.
Is that a Foster's?
Oh, dude, no, that's an export-only beer.
Sorry.
Australians don't drink that. You know what, I remember the first time I went to Vegas, C-Fox flew me down there to interview Johnny Knoxville, and I had to take a couple of listeners with me, and they were two young women, they were in their early 20s, and they were ready to party, and I was not in any mood to party, so we get off the plane. And we book into the hotel. We're staying at the Planet Hollywood Hotel. And the first thing these two gals do is, oh my God, let's go to the gift shop and buy beer. And one of them bought one of those giant, almost like liter cans of beer. And I was like, what? You're going to drink that? And she goes, you should get a Foster's. They have Foster's as well. And I saw Foster's that large. I'm like, okay, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Not only was it Foster's, but it was like a liter of Foster's beer. No one should ever drink that as toilet water.
Do you have any social media thoughts?
You know what? I got to be honest with you, is I used to be one of those people who stupidly engaged with trolls.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't know any better. I did not know any better. Now, I now have a policy that if you don't have a picture in your profile, I will not interact with you.
So never the egg.
If you're an egg or whatever that new shape is that Twitter's gone with, I will not interact with you. I'm just not going to do it. I don't have time for it.
And anybody with protected tweets.
Protected tweets any of that. I have no reason to engage with you. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're trying to say or what you're trying to prove. I'm just not doing it.
What's your favorite chocolate bar in Canada?
I am a fan of the Cadbury hazelnut that you get at the superstore. Sometimes it's on sale for $2. When it is, I buy like 10 of them. Have you seen these?
Yeah.
They're like 100 grams of chocolate. And I also like my other favorite one that Linda Steele got me onto is the Coffee Crisp.
Yeah.
Coffee Crisp is where it's at, man.
Yeah, I was going to go down the Coffee Crisp road and just suggest, I hope you like that chocolate bar, because I do know that Cherry Ripes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a weakness for me. That's a Cadbury product from Australia.
Yeah.
Which I have to get flown in. I have generally, if I know a Canadian going to Australia, I harass them to the point of annoyance to bring me back things.
What has year one been like for the shift, and where's the show going next?
Year one has been amazing. I only see our show growing. Where is it going next? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I can tell you it's likely going to show up on more stations across Canada in this year that's coming up. I can't say which ones because I know that they're still working on that. But here's, I will say this, and do you mind if I pitch the show to people that may listen to this as program directors of stations?
That's what this show is for.
Is give our show a chance. If you're a program director of a rock station in this country, I want you to do me a favor and just listen to one of our shows, because I continually will try and pitch our show as a great overnight show for any rock station in this country. In a market, obviously, where Chorus doesn't have stations. You know, this is a network show. It's a commercially available product, and I want it on as many stations as possible. You know, I have list. We're not on air in Saskatchewan yet, and I get listeners from Saskatchewan. We're not on air in Fort Mac yet, but I get listeners from Fort Mac. So I want to make sure that our show can get a really big footprint, because it is the only live overnight talk show in all of Canada that takes live calls, and we'll have that conversation. So if you're a PD and you want this show on your station, contact us and I'll point you in the right direction, because I want to be on your radio station. I want to provide something fun for you guys overnight instead of just a jukebox.
Drex, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Matt, I appreciate your time too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Sound Off Podcast. Find us online at soundoffpodcast.com and connect with us wherever great social media is housed. The show is imaged using the sounds from Core Image Studios.
Written and hosted by Matt Kundle.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at AveryRich.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.